Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to In the Drink. I'm Joe Campanelli, the beverage director and partner of Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, Anfora, and La Picho restaurants in New York City. And I'm very excited today to be here with a very good friend of mine, a superstar in the wine industry. It's true. Anthony Giglio. Anthony, he's just one of the greatest guys. He's a journalist, a sommelier, an educator, an author. He's written several wine guides, including Food & Wine Magazine's Wine Guide in 2009, 10, and 11. He's a contributor to La Cucina Italiana, one of my absolute favorite magazines, Travel & Leisure. I can't keep up with all of them, but many more.
And we're going to talk about a piece in Food & Wine that I wrote recently.
And we're going to talk about a piece in Food & Wine. I was all excited to ask Anthony about this piece that he wrote about in Food & Wine. I was reading it just this morning, actually, about how much he despises blind wine tasting. And then what happens when he gets here? He has two wines for me to taste blind.
To prove a point.
Well, tell us a little bit about why you don't like blind wine tasting.
It's not that I don't like it. I have a theory, and so this is a circuitous route to this answer is that, you know, having dedicated the last 22 years of my career to helping Americans relax about wine, and that is, you know, the great irony of if I could draw such a blanket statement is Americans are the most opinionated, confident, forthright people on the planet until you say the word wine. And then no one has an opinion, or at least most people don't that I talk to. Or they're afraid to say the wrong thing. Or they think there's a right answer and a wrong answer to what they're drinking. Or they're afraid to admit that they like big, buttery, oaky Chardonnays in the 80s style. I'm here to say I'm not here to judge. I want everyone to relax and remember that at the end of the day, it's fermented grape juice and cut the pomposity of it all. So blind tasting, I think, is great for us who, you know, we're studying to be sommeliers. And I confess, I'm the bane of most sommeliers because I studied to be a sommelier only for the vocabulary and the education and, let's say, the technical prowess to put that into effect as a writer. I'm a journalist first, so I'm not practicing on the floor. I worked at Windows on the World for two short seasons, and that was the end of it. So I've just taken what I learned, and then I use it to make a really practical application. Blind tasting was really important because it helped us to learn to identify what makes things stand out, different characteristics from different places, different grapes, different wines. But it's not a parlor trick, and it's not something that should be taken lightly. And I'm seeing more and more of it thrown into the mix of parties I go to. Like everywhere I go, people put a wine in front of me and say, "What is it?" And I don't want to play this game. In Food & Wine, in the October issue, I convinced Ray Isle and Dana Cowan to let me write what starts off sort of as a rant, but I think most people will get that it's part, just me being sarcastic too, that I just don't want this to turn into the next reality show. And I was at a restaurant in Piedmont, and I was with some editors and wine writers, and we're all talking about the amazing list of wines from Piedmont on the list, and the waiter, who we think is the waiter, is also the owner, and he hears our conversation and decides that he wants to play a trick. So he brings two decanted wines in carafes with no labels and says, "So tell me, which one is from Piedmont and which one is from faraway Tuscany? I leave it to you." And he walked away. And then it turned into Game of Thrones. We were all like, it ruined everything because it would turn into arguments and fights. And it was fun, but it was annoying. And I just wanted to sink into the beautiful fonduta with duck egg and white truffles.
And not bother that. I mean, I think I actually really enjoy blind tasting. but not at the dinner table. You know, when you're at the dinner table, it's time to just relax and enjoy. And I've done quite a bit of blind tasting, but I don't think that's what separates someone from being a great sommelier and not a good sommelier. A really great sommelier is someone who can find the wine that your guests really like and show them a really good time. As a sommelier, you're just a host. You're someone who's bringing the fermented grape juice, bringing the wine, bringing the joy. And being able to blind taste a wine and nail it isn't always the isn't what separates a good sommelier from a great sommelier.
No, but you've been around our brethren who always love to. It's like the kids in the courtyard. There's always the alpha males or the alpha females of the group who want to stand out, and that's what I see. And we were mm-hmm. talking about this earlier. You've even been invited to participate in them. So I'm saying I'm getting press releases now that invite me to consumer wine tastings that end in blind tastings. And you know, I just think it sends the wrong message. People are going to be terrified again to talk about wine. I don't want people to be afraid to say what they like. And there are a lot of people who are afraid to say, I like the Pinot Grigio, or I like the White Zinfandel, or the boxed wine even. I mean, I get that a lot. So I'm just here to say, relax. And I don't want this to turn into the next reality show competition on, you know, that follows Top Chef.
So when everyone else relax, but you want to scare the crap out of me with this blind tasting in front of someone I really respect.
You know what I want to do? It was just the thought I had this morning. I was walking out. I said, you know what? I'm going to bring two, because I'm working on the story for my column in La Cucina for the December issue. And I called in some off the beaten path wines from Italy. And when I got them, I thought, these are nuts. Like, I would never, one I might know, but it's in a style that's unfamiliar. And one I would never guess in a million years. And I'm not here to say that you should be able to guess it either, because I don't think anybody could guess this.
Okay.
But I want to take
it. Tastes a lot of Italian wine.
Okay. But I want to take it from there, though, then to talk about what I wrote in Food and Wine, which is when I interviewed Sabato Sagaria, the master sommelier at the Little Nell in Aspen. He came up with such a brilliant answer that when I interviewed a whole bunch of sommeliers for this piece, but he's the only quote that made it, because it was the smartest. So should we taste real quick?
Let's taste.
I'm going to pour two wines. I pulled the corks already, although I know that makes great radio sound. I did it ahead of time. So let's just call this glass number one.
Glass number one.
And I'm going to give it to you. Actually, I'll pour a little.
I can tell from here it is red wine made from grapes.
All right. I was just going to say, don't tell me you're going to guess this already. Come on.
The interesting thing, I think, is kind of how you get to your conclusion. I mean, if someone just smells a wine and says, oh, I could tell that is this exact vineyard and vintage and whatever, because maybe they just had a memory of it. To me, that's not interesting at all. But if someone has a very conclusive way and they're giving a lot of evidence as to why they're getting there, I think that's what tells someone's a really good
blind
taster.
Right, right.
All right. So you said this is Italian? They're both Italian?
They're both Italian.
All right, so that's a...
And you are familiar with Italian wine?
I'm familiar with Italian wine.
How would you describe the color?
It's a medium, deep red.
Okay. Doesn't seem to be too old, right? There's no browning. So
there's no browning, and the color goes all the way, pretty much all the way to the edge. So I'd say it's a pretty young wine. It doesn't look like it, just from the color, it doesn't look like it's particularly concentrated. Mm-hmm. So just from the color, I'm thinking it's probably a cooler climate wine.
Okay, and just let's settle the one other question. Is it sparkling or still?
Oh, this is a still red wine.
Still red wine. Okay, so it's not bubbly.
And it's not staining the glass at all. So which again leads me to think that it's probably a little bit of a cooler climate.
Here's where you might guess right away, because it's pretty familiar to me. But I guess I'm prejudiced by knowing what it is. What I smelled last night, because it's not what it should be, even though it smells like what it is. That's the riddle.
It's not what it
should be. How about this? Does it remind you of anything? Let's just start there. How would you describe the aroma without having to guess anything else? What would you describe this aroma as? What fruits come to mind, or earthy nuances,
like
anything?
Small red crunchy fruit, like cranberry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost got like a Vino Novello nose to it too. There's something like freshly macerated grapes, almost like Beaujolais, but it's not, wrong country.
Oh, Beaujolais was the first thing that came to my mind. Right. I was like, wait, but we're in Italy. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Okay. See, it does remind me. That would be part of the guessing game.
All right.
It's hard after a macchiato. I'm going to take another sip.
All right, we're taking a sip. Anthony's doing is he's puckering his lips. He's bringing little retro nasal, sucking in a little air.
People have got retro nasals. I say, does anyone here understand plumbing? It is the vent. You need the vent, which is your nose. You know, people are always thrown off when I say, if I put a clothespin on your nose and serve you pickle juice, you will taste nothing. And that just escapes. It's so obvious, but it escapes a lot of people.
High acid red wine.
High acid red wine. Absolutely. Cold climate, you were right.
Cold climate, high
North,
acid
Central,
wine.
Southern Italy, where do you think?
It's got to be, this has to be there, like the in the Piedmont, Valle d'Aosta kind of situation.
Yes.
Just to play the odds, it's probably, I'm thinking like in the Barbera kind of camp, but if not, then
I'd go
up to
close. And here's Valle d'Aosta. Here's the fun part. It is Brachetto.
It's Brachetto.
In a still version, which I've never had before.
It's so aromatic. That makes sense.
It's so, I mean, once then you smell it again, you go, of course that's Brachetto, but
yeah.
But without the bubbles, you get thrown, right?
It's so aromatic.
It's Sottimano Matte 2011 Brachetto, sent to me by my friends at Skernik. And I thought it was really, really interesting when I had two bottles, so I tasted one yesterday. And it smells like Brachetto, but without the bubbles, you're completely thrown, right?
That's delicious.
And really, I'm looking at
the bottle says it's 14% alcohol. That's, in the scheme of things, that's pretty high.
Buried under acid, you don't taste it.
It doesn't feel like it at all. Yeah. It feels like light-bodied.
So, I really think that's an interesting talking point because, you know, a lot of people now, even people who, I think that's a talking point for a lot of people to talk about the alcohol. They need something to say. People go, oh, I like this one. Oh, it's so high in alcohol, or it's not so high in alcohol. Yeah. But I mean, if you go back to the European and American paradigm where American wines are so much fruitier, here we have that acid that's so inherently European that it'll bury even the alcohol underneath it. Like, it's so much more refreshing. If this were 14%, you know, Napa Valley wine, it would taste like a 14% Napa Valley Zinfandel, let's say, like, you know, something from California like
the
that.
The acid balances it out.
I think it's beautiful.
For those of you guys who've never had it at home, I really love Brachetto in its more conventional form
as
well.
Yeah, me too.
Brachetto is usually a sparkling, almost a rosé. It's a pale red sparkling wine. And it's the
party favorite. Every time I pull it out, people love. Yeah. I think it's a crowd pleaser, and it's unknown. Sparkling red just is off-putting. I don't serve it in champagne flutes. I think it's gross to put
in
flutes.
You put it in a white wine glass like this.
Exactly.
Made just in the same style as Moscato d'Asti from the town right next door, and it's really fun. And incidentally, I think it's the lowest alcohol wine. Brachetto and Moscato are the lowest alcohol wines legally allowed. Which is a nice thing.
Yeah, this one, this is not the standard. The one that we just had is not the same. Joe, I'm going to already say, I just poured the second glass. Of, again, an Italian wine. We're having fun with the blind tasting, but if we're doing a comparative, this one is darker.
It's much deeper in color. Still looks very, very young.
The halo is almost invisible, practically. That glycerol around the rim, there's no browning at all.
No browning at all. The color goes all the way to the edge. Sometimes with older wines, you see that the color starts pulling back from the edge. You get a watery edge, but the color goes all the way there.
Nose is very interesting. Completely different than the last one. Hmm. What are you smelling?
Much darker black fruit, crunchy fruit. But it's funny. It's black fruit, but not overripe. So I when I'm tasting wine, I like to think not only about what kind of fruit it is, but what state it's in, right? I like to think of large categories first. Is it fruit? Is it animal? Is it vegetal? Is it oak? All right, it's fruit. Is it citrus? Okay, I've determined there's some citrus in this.
Right.
And then citrus can be very different if you're talking about lime or pineapple. Those are both citrus fruits, right? But a tart lime and like a canned pineapple are two very different things. So say you say it's pineapple, and then what's the state of that pineapple? So I'd like to think about not just the fruit that's in there, but kind of what state the fruit's in. This to me is, it's definitely black fruit, but it's just ripe. It's not like overripe black fruit. It doesn't feel like it's particularly warm climate. Maybe it's the grape has black fruit character to it.
Yeah. I also think it's a monster in that it should be decanted. Like it's not giving up a lot to me right now. It's kind of hidden.
Maybe that's it as well. Kind of reminds me of a Rhone Valley wine.
But we're not in the Rhone.
We are
in Italy.
We're in Italy. Let's taste it.
Let's taste. Wow.
See, that's confusing.
It is, because you think it's bigger than it is. The finish isn't as tight.
Yeah, there's less structure on that than on the lighter wine. That Barchetto actually had a little bit of tannin even.
And yeah.
This is really soft.
A lot less acid, yeah.
It's less acid, less tannin, less soft.
It's just soft across the palate.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely more black fruit than red, whereas the Barchetto was, to me, all red fruit. But yes, that softness. You know what has that? And when you said the Rhone, I think of that chalkiness of violet candy
mm-hmm.
you pick up on like great Gigondas.
Yeah, it's definitely more like the Rhone in terms of the floral Rhone as opposed to like the herbaceous or animal. There's none of that like black olive or bacony kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, true.
It's more like the pretty.
The lavender violet kind of flat violet. Floral kind of things I pick up. All right, you ready to see what this is? You're gonna take any stab at all, and this is not to make you feel like you should know this, because I can't imagine you ever would. I had never heard it in my life.
The one thing, okay, it's God. It reminds me of.
Come on.
No, because it's very it is familiar in a way. I do think it's a more northern wine. You don't get like the rustic quality or the structure that you see in southern wines. If this was in the south, to have this kind of texture to be soft like that, I feel like would be either a lot riper.
Right. You were in this region earlier
in Valle d'Aosta.
Yep.
Okay, so it's Valle d'Aosta. Valle d'Aosta is really interesting. It's one of my favorite regions. Tell everyone
where it is.
So Valle d'Aosta is a little river valley that cuts through the Swiss-Italian Alps on the border of France. And you can see Mont Blanc from the vineyards. You can see Matterhorn. It's really interesting because you have grapes that are from Switzerland, France, native Valle d'Aosta grapes, Italian grapes from Piedmont. I'd probably say that this is the Fumin if it's from Valle d'Aosta.
Cut it out. Are you kidding me?
What? This is Fumin from Valle d'Aosta.
It is Fumin. That is unbelievable. It's just,
I love Valle d'Aosta wine.
I love the label too. This wow. It's Triolet. Lo Triolet. Like, I mean, the Italians, they just get fonts so much better than most American label designers. And it's Valle d'Aosta Fumin. So it's 80% Fumin. And then
it's like Petit Rouge or something.
20% of Gamaret.
I've never heard of that.
They'll probably say the teen up there, but it's Gamaret or Gamaret.
Yeah, because most of the reds in Valle d'Aosta are lighter than this. Yeah. And then Fumin is the one grape where you do get like
because I love darkness. I love that they have Syrah up there.
They do have Syrah there.
Yeah. So I thought you might say Syrah when I said Valle d'Aosta, but no, it's.
And there's some great Syrah. Like Le Cret Syrah is pretty.
Yeah, yeah. Le Cret is probably the most famous, right?
All right. Well, that was fun.
but guess what? At the end of the day, Sabato Zagaria would put these two down. Or actually, what Sabato at Little Nell said he would do. He said most customers come in and are completely intimidated by his, you know, his master sommelier pin and mm-hmm. the beautiful cut suit, and they say whatever you'd like to recommend. And he said that doesn't give me anything to work with. So he leaves and comes back with the Pepsi challenge, and it's one. Mainstream familiar wine, you know, familiar wine grape. Of course, we'll say, is it red or white? Were we going red or white? And they'll say red, let's say. So you might bring, you know, a classic Napa Valley Merlot or Cabernet or something, you know, something classic, and then something off the beaten path, like maybe one of these. And then put them down and just say, there's no right answer. Taste them both. Which do you like? And he engages them into talking about, this one is fruitier, this one's drier, this one's softer, this one makes my mouth water. And then I'll say, but at the end of the day, which one do you like right now? And then they'll say, I like that. And he'll say, then you like this. And that's terrific. And let me just tell you about the other one. And maybe you want to try it later with food and see what happens. But it just gives people vocabulary and a place to begin. And he could say, and if you like those kinds of wines, I might also suggest X, Y, and Z from the wine list. And it's a way to get people out of that terrified shell.
I've got to meet this guy because I completely agree that the only goal for wine, the main purpose of wine, is to bring enjoyment to people. It's one of the perks of being alive. But with that, we're just going to take a quick break. We'll be back shortly on In the Drink. We're here with my friend Anthony Giglio. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Something Good by Rene Lopez on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
All right, we're back with In the Drink. I'm Joe Campanelli, here with Anthony Giglio, my good friend, the wine educator, author, all-around fun wine guy. We're going to do something that I think is fun. We're going to do a quick rapid-fire, what would you drink in this scenario question.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's start off really easy, because Anthony... Anthony is comes from a great big Italian family. I know on Sundays they at least throughout the summer they get all the great tomatoes. I've seen pictures of it. It looks amazing. I'm just dying to be invited over for cooking all of they make tons of tomato sauce, lasts them the whole year every Sunday. What would you have with your family? Spaghetti and tomato sauce.
I love great dolcetto, so I like a little bit of that high acid. I pair acid with acid in that case.
Acid with acid, dolcetto. Okay. Anthony is a world traveler, and talk a little bit about his travels next time. What do you have on the beach somewhere in southern Europe? Let's say on the beach in France.
On the beach in France, I'm going to have a beautiful Bandol Rosé.
Bandol Rosé. Okay. We're out here in Bushwick. We're at Roberta's Pizza. What do you have with your friends with pizza?
Oh God, it's wide open. But how about a sparkling Lambrusco?
Okay. How about bowling?
Bowling. It's going to be red wine. I don't know. Bowling to me, I want to put a little buzz on. So I might go for maybe a high alk. Zinfandel, maybe.
Nice. And then let's see, one last one. Do you ever sneak wine into the movie theater?
I'm a master sneaker, and I use Coke bottles. I sneak wine everywhere I can.
So smart.
Yeah, use a Coke bottle. They never know.
And then what wine do you put in that Coke bottle?
Anything I can get my hands on. Where am I going to the movies? I would actually want to know what the movie is, and then I could tell you, like, oh, this is the theme for that movie. But
okay, let's extend our rapid fire comedy movie.
A comedy movie? A good Cru Beaujolais. I don't know why.
Action thriller.
Action thriller. Action thriller is going to have me on edge. I need to calm down. I want a big red to put a Valium. So a big New World cab.
Silent French film noir.
I'm going to the Rhone. I'm going to say, let's do a Vaquerasse or a Gigondas.
God, you're such a good sport. I had Chiara Pepe from Medio Pepe on this, and I asked her the bowling questions, and she's like, why do you ask me such stupid questions? I refuse to answer this.
I met with her that same week, and she brought some dynamite wines to my office. Holy cow. Oh, man. From the 80s.
I just went to Battersby the other night, which is fantastic, and actually brought a bottle that she gave me, that 1984 Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, which 84 was a really terrible vintage everywhere in the world, but when you have a great producer like Medio Pepe, it's pretty delicious wine.
Yeah, her wines were spectacular. I had she brought me an 84, and an 89, and those all were actually really important years of my life. So I was going through with her what each meant to me. Anyway, I digress. So wait, what, any more rapid fire or not?
That's it. You won.
Okay.
Yeah, you have 500 points.
The Coke bottle. I'm telling you, I'm the subversive. You know, before the shoe bomber ruined everything for all of us, and we can't bring any liquid on planes. I was always the one bringing stuff in, you know, in different bottles, so the flight attendants wouldn't be able to catch us. Have my own soda for my kids, quote unquote. But yeah, I bring the soda bottle everywhere I go.
That's right. So where are you going now? Where have you been recently?
Well, Food & Wine magazine sent me on a cruise from Barcelona along the south coast of Spain through the Straits and down to the Canary Islands, and I got off in Madeira. So it was pretty wild. And on the way, I stopped in Mallorca and went to Ànima Negra, which is just this magical winery in the middle of nowhere, where they make spectacular wines with a pretty unknown grape called Caillette, C-A-L-L-E-T. And it sounds French. And, you know, all of Spain, you know, at least in, you know, in and around, you know, the, you know, Priorat in Barcelona and all that, they'll tell you, like, you know, I met with Rene Barbier years ago, and he said, you know, we had Garnacha before the French had Grenache, and we had Mourvèdre before they had, you know, and on and on. So there's always this fun competition. So I asked the winemaker, is Caillette French? And he said, only in sound. Because it sounds like, but it's not. It's not, because you think it's spelled like C-A-I-L-L-E-T-T-E, but it's just C-A-I-L-L-E.
What do these wines taste like?
They're big, big brooding, dark black fruit wines, really gorgeous. They have Ànima Negra on two. And they're easy to find, actually. They're distributed here in the U.S. Worth seeking out. You'd walk right past them on the wine shelf if you'd ask questions. But maybe we could put on your website where we could find them.
Absolutely. Did you happen to stop at the Canary Islands?
So I got off before we got there. I went to Madeira and then came home because my wife was about to divorce me if I didn't get off the party boat and get back home to help our two kids get into school the first week.
Well, Madeira is certainly one of my favorite wines, but the Canary Islands, I mean, I'm just so enthusiastic about them. We have a ton of Canary Island wines at Anfora. There's an importer, Jose Pastor. I don't know if you've had any of the wines he's imported, but they just make these thrilling, just really terroir-specific, like unique wines from all these crazy indigenous grapes, and I love them.
Yeah, I got to get over. I haven't been to Anfora in way too long.
It's been too long.
The whole summer passed. I was in Italy for a while, and then I haven't been there probably since June. So I'd love to taste them, but Madeira. Here's what I like to Madeira.
Oh, yeah, Madeira, yeah.
So of course, in Madeira, you know, at the airport, you go to the airport lounge, and they have a wide array of Madeira by the, you know, that you could pour yourself, and there were dry Madeiras, really beautiful dry Madeiras, and they had like savory snacks and the dry Madeira section, and then the sweet Madeira and the cheeses and dried fruits and nuts and things like that. And I'd never had dry Madeira, and it was a revelation to me. It was beautiful. It was very much like sherry, very much like sherry. And it's something that, you know, again, I think sherry is such a hard sell already for Americans to wrap their heads around. We don't need another category like dry Madeira, but for me, it was eye-opening.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I wish we'd sell more sherry at the restaurants. I got the beautiful La Botta sherries at Lartuzzi. I think they're just really thrilling and just could not sell them to save my life. It just wasn't happening. But for some reason, people do, like, we do sell a little bit more Madeira than we do sherry, but it's kind of like an end of the meal sort of thing. So we don't have the sweet sherries. People are looking for something at the end of the meal. And sometimes it can be thrilling to have an older Madeira.
Yeah. I did enjoy it. Every time I go to Spain, I mean, I was in Barcelona for just one day, but I love that at that, you know, that happy hour, which is 8 o'clock, not 5 o'clock. People are having sherry of all different levels of dryness with fantastic little tapas, and it's such a great tradition and a way to unwind, and they're so interesting, and you know, I can't talk enough about the different styles of sherry and how well they pair with so many salty, savory snacks. And you know, it's still arm wrestling with most people. They just can't wrap their heads around it. They think of sherry, they think of, you know, their grandmother's, you know, dusty bottle that's, you know, sitting on the kitchen counter, heating and cooking all day long. It's just,
yeah, I think, you know, so sherry's been that kind of a recurring theme on the show. I think every wine professional is just screaming about how amazing sherry is and how underrated it is. What is something that you personally feel like other than sherry? Because I'm with you. I think sherry is like the greatest thing, and people should drink. It's inexpensive.
Other than
it's
sherry,
versatile. But what else do you think?
I think, well, I mentioned earlier, my pizza party wine would be the Brachetto. Lambrusco. I think Lambrusco is completely unrecognized. And, you know, we've been talking about it for years in the restaurant trade, let's say. But that wine is so versatile. And every time I pour it, out for friends, they say, "What is this?" And because it's this odd, very pale, slightly fizzy, you know, deliciously refreshing food wine. And people say, "What is it?" And I say, "It's Lambrusco." And people of a certain age will immediately go to Riniti and say, "Oh, I thought this was terrible. I thought this, I'm not supposed to like this." And I'm like, "No, you know, Riniti was a party wine in the 70s and it had served its purpose, but this is what dry Lambrusco tastes like. It's a totally different, this is what the Italians have been holding secret for until the last 10 years, I'd say maybe 5 years, it's really coming into play. But it's so delicious, so affordable, yeah. and goes with everything.
Yeah, and so incidentally, if you need a little diversion from a boring work day, you Google or YouTube the Riuniti on Ice commercials from the 70s. They are just hilarious. But I mean, but certainly also kind of quite detestable. They sort of did for Lambrusco what Georges Dubuff did to Beaujolais. They just made people think that it just could only be just a low quality, just like unspecific kind of product.
And you know, this is our job to get it out there. But it's also, I also look at the governments over there and say, like, your job to make it easier. The 10 crews of Beaujolais, the 10 names that are on every, that could appear on every bottle of quality Beaujolais, lead no one to understand that that's also Beaujolais. So when you see Moulin Avant, or you see Brie, you know, which is in every ice bucket in every French restaurant you'll ever go to between June and August. It's served like white wine, but it's red and it's ice cold, and it's absolutely delicious with everything. But you look at the bottle, you see Brie, unpronounceable in English as Bruli. And but if at least it said, you know, parentheses Beaujolais, it would at least help us when we say you need to try real Beaujolais, not the Nouveau, not the party wine, the third Thursday of November. That's supposed to expire by Christmas. You're never supposed to drink it after that. In France, they don't even drink it the Friday after Beaujolais. Thursday, it's not even drunk. Real Beaujolais, Cru Beaujolais, there's 10 names. And, you know, the only way to figure it out is to ask a good merchant, ask a good som like you, or email me or Google me and I'll tell you. But it's not easy, and that's the wine that's really
or follow
delicious.
You on Twitter.
Follow me on Twitter at WineWiseGuy.
At WineWiseGuy.
Facebook, Anthony Giglio. And my website is AnthonyGiglio.com.
And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. That if someone were to ask me the same question, the most underrated region, Beaujolais. I just absolutely love Beaujolais. Well, Anthony Giglio, thank you so much. I always have a great time and learn a little something when we're hanging out. Definitely, please, everyone, just check out Anthony's articles in La Cucina, Food and Wine, Travel and Leisure, and so many more. Follow him at WineWiseGuy on Twitter. I do. Always dropping some really fun knowledge. And thanks again. We'll talk to you next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.